Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center. This is Bob Ebensee along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties, on this morning's Conservation Report. Good morning, Grant.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Hey, the 2 weeks fly by pretty fast, and right now it's high school sports and a lot of outdoor activities as far as hunting and I guess a little bit of fishing yet, but maybe it's too cold for that. Let's get right into it and talk about, as we speak, the deer season is open.
It is. This is probably the one time of the year that a lot of people look for and wait all season for, but yeah, the shotgun one season here in Iowa is underway, and it's, of course, immensely popular. Weather's starting to cooperate a little bit for people and kind of cool down, so that's one nice thing about having deer season in Iowa in December is that typically you won't have to worry about your deer spoiling too much. But yeah, this season runs from December 3rd through the 7th. So we've still got a few days, and it'll be followed up here real shortly by the Shotgun 2 season, which runs from December 10th through the 18th. So the second one is a little bit longer, probably a little bit more popular even. I think people sometimes tend to prefer the second season because it gives them a few more options as far as days to go is concerned. So, yeah, it's... Shotgun season is here finally.
You bet. Let's talk about some requirements, and these are important. Number one, tag, and number two, registering.
You bet. Yeah, and we've talked about this a little bit in previous shows, but you know, it's something that I really want to stress to people, and quite frankly, it's something that this is probably one of our number one violations is tagging requirements and registering requirements. So basically, you know, kind of the procedure is whenever you harvest a deer in Iowa, you've got several things that you need to do. I've kind of got a tag here in front of me to kind of show us how things go. But immediately upon killing a deer here in Iowa or a turkey, you'll notice on your tag at the very bottom portion is going to be a series of letters and numbers. And what you need to do is after you've harvested a deer or turkey, you need to notch that. And that pretty much invalidates that tag right away. So you need to pick the month that it's killed in along with the day that it's killed in as well. So you notch that. And then what you'll do is you'll slap on the bottom portion of the tag, the transportation tag. For an antlerless deer, it's going to go on the leg. And for an antlered buck, it's going to go on the antlers. Mm-hmm. So you put that on there, and then you're good to go. That needs to be completed within 15 minutes of finding the animal or before it's transported or moved in any manner. So, you know, undoubtedly, I will run into people every deer season who have their tag in their pocket, and they say, well, I didn't want to drag the tag off. And I don't know if you've ever put one of these tags on, but you literally... You have to take a knife to cut them off. They're so adhesive on the back. So if you do it properly, there's very little chance of these things coming off. And if it does come off, at least when you're in the field and I come across you, you can show me a tag that's missing the bottom portion, and I can say, well, let's go look for it. Or if we can't find it, at least we've got the top portion there that we can still kind of go off of. So that makes me feel a lot better than the person who simply doesn't bother to put it on the animal, because like I tell countless people, we don't know what your intent is. If your intent is to get the animal home and put it in a shed and then go back out and hunt on the same tag, there's lots of different options there that can get people kind of in a bind. So let's make sure that we're getting those things tagged immediately. And then you've got until midnight the day following the kill to register your harvest. You can register it in a couple of different ways. You can call the number. There's an 800 number at the top of the tag there on the harvest reporting section. You can call that. You're going to give them your tag number. It's going to be a 9-digit number. And then after they ask you a few questions, they'll give you a confirmation number in which you write on the top portion of the tag and then place on the animal along with the transportation tag. So that's one of the things that we're really seeing people kind of get lax on. We estimate that 20% of deer aren't registered in Iowa, and that's unfortunate because that's really important information for the biologists. They know, you know, they can tell how the herd is doing, the health of it, and the number of deer that are harvested, obviously. they can make some adjustments maybe to tags that maybe reduce the number of antlerless tags available or increase the number for the following years. So there's a lot of things that are gained by registering your deer and turkeys in Iowa, and it's not an option. It's the law, so you have to do it. And if you look at your tag, a lot of times there's a whole lot of valuable information on them. There's information on the front. It's got the 800 number. And if you flip over on the back, there's all sorts of information there as well. It's got the tip number for reporting violations. So, you know, spend a little bit of time looking at your tag themselves. Make sure you're signing them before you head to the field. And, you know, it's a pretty simple process, but it's one that has to be followed kind of pretty closely there.
You bet. Another thing they're looking for this year is in some areas, and I think we have one to our west, is chronic wasting disease. Trying to follow up and see what is happening in that. I think there was a case of that 2 or 3 years ago in a confined herd, and they're keeping tabs on it, right?
They are, and I spoke to the one of the private lands biologists about that the other day, and they're required to get so many samples per county, and it's not a large number of samples, and a lot of them kind of just go to a few deer camps, and they can kind of get that number met pretty easily. But yeah, you know, that's really important as well, to kind of monitor the status of CWD, because, you know, CWD is kind of a scary disease that deer can get. There's no prevention for it, unfortunately, and it's just something that we as hunters, we can kind of help control it a little bit by maybe reporting sick deer that we find. One of the things that we really have to be cautious of is just disposing of the spine and the skull in a ditch or something like that, you know, because CWD can be passed from live deer from a carcass of a deer. These prions can be found in the soil, and it's something that the deer can track simply by going up and sniffing on a dead deer. So that's one of the things why we always encourage folks to, you know, properly dispose of your carcass, whether it's a landfill, a burn pile, or whatever. But, you know, you hate to see deer thrown in the ditch this time of the year, and undoubtedly it happens. And it can be a problem, I realize, for people who live in town where, you know, you don't have too many places to go out and get rid of them. But definitely want to make sure that we're disposing of the waste properly.
You bet. Little note from Nebraska. A 14-year-old girl over there harvested the top elk ever in Nebraska. It's a non-typical. I think it ranks up in the top 10 nationally. Wow. And if I was chauvinistic at all, I'd say that's another reason not to teach females how to hunt.
That's right. They
keep showing us up.
They do.
Okay, we're going to talk about safety a little bit later on, but let's talk about waterfowl. That's a mystery. There's ducks in Missouri, but none in Iowa. What's the deal?
Yeah, there is. You know, we were talking before the show, where's the ducks at? And I don't know if and sometimes that can just happen where you have a massive migration, and it can occur literally overnight. And, you know, Iowa is not a huge state, so it's conceivable that these waterfowl could have passed over the state in just a number of days, particularly at night. I know we had a real cold snap up in the Dakotas a couple of weeks ago, and I suspect that had a lot to do with the migration that has already passed through us. But I was talking to some former colleagues in Missouri the other day, and, you know, they've got a couple hundred thousand ducks and geese on some of their refuges. So they don't fly around Iowa usually. They had to come across to somewhere.
Yep.
But we just, you know, I personally didn't see hardly any ducks flying anywhere, especially migrating ducks. I'm starting to see a few more geese show up here locally. And, of course, the trumpeter swans are increasing in numbers here in Atlantic and all around Cass County. So, you know, it's happening, but it seems like it's kind of been a all or nothing deal this year. And that can happen at times.
You bet. Deal came across the wire that Rick Hansen was nice enough to give to me. Waterfowl refuges are closed to all other hunting during the waterfowl season. I did not know that. Probably doesn't pertain too much, but I suppose Bays Branch or some of those places would have pheasant hunting and that type thing on there. That is verboten, as we used to say in Germany.
Yeah, you know, that's I saw that myself this morning, and it's a good reminder. And I think the reason that we're seeing it at this time is because some of our duck seasons are overlapping with some of the firearm deer seasons that we have in Iowa this year. And, you know, there may be some folks who have gone out to the same refuge after duck season for a number of years deer hunting, and they might not realize that this year that the duck season is maybe just a little bit different in length, and it ends at a little bit different time period this year. So, yeah, make sure that you, if you have hunted those waterfowl refuges, that you're checking to make sure that the waterfowl season is completely closed before you go in there, because when waterfowl season is open, those refuges are off limits to anybody. So mm-hmm. It's a good reminder.
Okay, changing gears once more. Let's talk to some guys that, I don't know, as a group, they're not well respected, I think, and that's the trappers. They you kind of think of a trapper as a guy living in a little shack down by the river, and that's not the case. We've got some young people that are starting to trap. Saw three of them the other morning out at McDonald's, and they were booted up and had been out running their traps, and you've run into a few of those.
I have, and, you know, it's trapping is a really interesting sport because, unfortunately, some trappers are driven by the price of the hides,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little bit understandable, but it's good to see these young kids that are getting interested in the sport because it's kind of a dying sport, I think, in some places. So it's good to see youngsters getting out there and still trapping raccoons because, you know, fur prices this year are probably at all-time lows, and it's important that we still have trappers because they are an excellent manager or tool for managing wildlife populations, especially fur bearers. So, and not only, you know, is it important to harvest raccoons to prevent the spread of distemper and other diseases that they may encounter if their populations get really high, but it's important to because it helps a number of other species, you know, ground nesting birds, for example, the pheasants, the quail, the turkeys. Those are things that, you know, I always tell people, you know, every raccoon that we catch, you may potentially be saving a pheasant nest.
Oh,
so it's important that we have those people out there still doing that. But
right.
Yeah, you want to make sure that you're following the season dates, of course, and obviously want to make sure that you're properly licensed with that fur harvester's license as well.
You ran across a group the other night that was doing just about everything wrong they could.
They were, and unfortunately, that's sometimes I see the worst of people in my job. But you know, it's a good reminder when you come across people and they've done so many things wrong, and you explain to them what they've done wrong, and they sometimes have absolutely no idea what they're doing is illegal. Sometimes I buy that, and sometimes I don't. But you know, if that's the case and you're truly uneducated, we print these regulation books off for a reason, you know, and I always encourage folks before they, you know, before you become an overnight trapper, sit down, read the regulations. If you don't understand something or a term doesn't make sense to you, contact us. We'll walk you through it and try to help you out and understand some of the regulations that are in place. But, you know, it's simple things like sometimes folks don't realize that when you're out trapping, you've got to have all your traps tagged with your name and your address on them. And you can't be out physically trapping and have a pickup truck full of traps in the back that are untagged.
Hard to explain.
It's hard to explain because we don't know if you're setting traps that are untagged, obviously. So there's little things like that, you know, people, it may not seem like a big deal at the time, but it's something that they need to pay close attention to, and those things can snowball and turn into a big deal if they let it get out of hand. But yeah, it's a trapping. There's a lot of rules and regulations to it. It's one of the more in-depth seasons and requirements that we have. So always advise people to sit down and go over those regulations.
Right. Do it right. You bet.
You bet.
We were going to talk about safety, and I think we've done that a lot, and nobody pays attention to us. We're kind of preaching to the choir. We're virtually out of time. I do want to mention the Turn-In Poachers program, that if you see something going on, and that was the case the other night, I believe, of a landowner, somebody spotted what was going on, and that is so important to keep everybody on the playing field playing even.
Absolutely. You know, I wrote about this in a newspaper article the other day. Typically in Iowa, there's one conservation officer for every two counties. So that's a huge area to cover. You know, I've got 20,000 residents between Cass and Adair counties to try and satisfy. So we rely completely on the help of law-abiding sportsmen and women. Mm-hmm. Without their help, I can drive around all day, and yeah, I might check a few people here, but if there's a poaching problem in an area, I need to know about it because I can't be in 20 places at one time. So that's why it's so important to keep that number handy. And if you witness any of these violations taking place, by all means, give me a call on my cell phone. That number is 712-250-0303. And also, if you go to the back of the regulations book on page 38, you're going to see a page there that's devoted to nothing but the telephone numbers for conservation officers in the state. And if you're in a county and you see something go on, flip to that page there, call that person up, give us a call.
Sounds great. For Lyman Ag Supply and the Family Vision Center, this has been Bob Evensee along with Grant Jelly, the conservation officer for Cass and Adair Counties on this morning's Conservation Report.